Okay, good. Well, my name is Michael, and I am a compulsive overeater. And I wanted to, first of all, thank you guys for all being here. And my time, it's 2 o'clock. I am in Los Angeles, and it's a nice way. I started the morning off with an OA meeting, 7:30 in Studio City. And knowing that I was going to have a meeting at 2 o'clock to speak at, and my head told me, well, you're on vacation. Why don't you relax and sleep? But I don't know about you guys. In abstinence since program, if I decide to go back to sleep, and even if it's for an hour or two, I wake up and my head is very, very loud. And action is a very powerful tool for me in this program. And it's contrary to what I like to do. Left to my own devices, I like to lay in bed and watch TV and eat pizza and Häagen-Dazs and whatever else you'll shove into my mouth so that I can anesthetize myself from being such a sensitive and crazy person on the natch. I came to you originally through the back doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, am I supposed to speak on the seventh tradition? Because, yeah, I mean, otherwise it's going to be all about me. It's still going to be about me, but I'm going to skew it to the seventh tradition. So am I supposed to speak on the seventh? Somebody give me a yay or a nay.
Just your story, just your experience, strength, and hope, as you'd like to share it with us.
Okay. So Alcoholics Anonymous, smoking 3 packs a day, cigarettes at the end of my first year clean and sober and not knowing what to do. Bitching about it in AA, and they told me to shut up. And they said they don't care how many cigarettes I smoke. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And I got very perturbed and angry. And somebody pointed me in the direction of Nicotine Anonymous. And their primary purpose was to abstain from the habit, whatever, the compulsion to smoke. And I went there for about 6 weeks. And after about 6 weeks, the compulsion was lifted. So it's kind of a miraculous thing. And the only thing is I put on 30 pounds in 30 days. And I went back to AA and I started complaining about Häagen-Dazs and pizza and eggnog shakes and taquitos. And they said, "What's wrong with you? Didn't you get the message with the cigarettes?" What? I said, I know there's OA. I know where to go." And so I went and I listened to you guys and I heard 3 meals a day and nothing in between. A lot of you didn't eat recreational sugar, no white flour. And I think, yeah, okay, I can do that. And I couldn't. And I kept getting heavier and heavier. And finally, after about a year of being in the periphery of OA, I raised my hand. My name is Michael. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I don't know. I'm scared. I don't know how to do this. And Matt Masterman, may he rest in peace. He was a very active member of the program. This was in the early 80s, mid 80s. And he reached out to me and he asked me what I was going to eat that day. And I said, "I don't know." And I didn't want to know. I didn't want the awareness of what I was doing to my body. He said, "Well, why don't you call me, Michael, at the end of the day and tell me what you ate?" And so I believed him. He had lost over 100 pounds. And I called him and I remember what I ate all those years ago, but I do know it was probably cleaner than what I was eating because I wanted to impress Matt. And so Matt got me in the habit of taking a fifth step with my food, admitting to myself, to God, and another human being the exact nature of what I'm putting into my body. And that was very, very hard for me, especially in the beginning. And I believed in Matt. I believed in the 12 steps. They certainly cured my alcohol and drug addiction and my cigarette addiction. And so I started on the road of happy destiny with you people. However, after about 7 years clean and sober and pulling away from you guys, abstinence and everything, because I was pretty comfortable, I stopped coming to you guys. And I got very heavily into psychotherapy. My mom, there's mental illness history in my family. My mom was diagnosed with schizophrenia in the early 50s after she had me. She went into postpartum psychosis and an actual diagnosis of schizophrenia. And she had lots of shock treatments to kind of shock her back into reality. They helped her. And in the early 50s, there was an operation called a lobotomy where they cut a portion of your brain that they thought was diseased. And so my mom had one of those. And it didn't make her any better, but it didn't make her any worse. And so my memories of her were going to visit her at Patton State Hospital, and she'd be lucid. Michael, I'm going to come and take care of you. And then the next week we'd see her, and she'd say, my father, you son of a bitch. And my God, it was like, it was a little scary, I think, as a kid. But that didn't cause me to be a compulsive overeater, but it kind of added fuel to the fire to have sugar and all the stuff that I was putting in my body to anesthetize myself from life on life's terms. My mom ironically died at the age of 44, 45 at Camarillo State Hospital, going to get a pack of cigarettes, ironically. I used to be very angry at my mother, especially when I got into psychotherapy, and you know, they kind of make you get introverted and don't you hate your mother, and she wasn't there for you, and all this crazy stuff. And I remember at my mom's funeral, my dad asked the rabbi, what was the point of her life? And the rabbi said, you know, sometimes we just don't understand what God's will is. And that did not fly very well with me, because first of all, today I want to understand what God's will is. Today, it's probably the most important part in my life, and my keeping my abstinence and my sobriety. What do you want from me, God? You want that? I don't want to do it. I know how to kind of get out of that when I don't want to do it, because there's a lot of stuff that I don't want to do. So anyway, mom, may she rest in peace, died in her early 40s. And when I took an inventory, I thought, well, you know what? The point of my mom's life, I mean, it's rather self-centered of me, but I'm alive, you know, but we didn't have any more kids. I don't have any siblings. But I'm alive, and I'm working the steps, and I'm getting closer to a higher power. I've got my own. I've got 4 children, 3 grandchildren. One of my kids is sober and clean and Alcoholics Anonymous. And hold on a second. Lydian, I'm leading a meeting, and I'm doing a really good job, but I'll call you back in about 45 minutes. Bye. My ego is really always here. Where was I? Okay, so anyway, so my mom gave me the gift of life. And it may have been a gift from her higher power to take her in her early 40s, because you can imagine she'd be like close to 100 years old now, you know, doing the Thorazine shuffle and with the lobotomy and everything. So I believe that anybody that we've lost, that I've lost, is an angel right now. Even the people that I didn't like, you know, they're kind of looking on and cheering me on, because, you know, a day at a time, I think this program saves my life. And I think I'm not perfect at it, but I'm better now at it than I was when I came to you originally. I lost my abstinence because I started popping pills alcoholically, and I didn't tell my AA sponsor about it. And I am very, very secret, very into therapy, very now into resentments, which will kill us. And but I went to a meeting and I heard Dr. Paul speak. Dr. Paul's in the big book, and he wrote the part on acceptance. And he said, never in my 20 some odd years of sobriety have I had a problem to which the 12 steps did not offer me a solution. Well, I was so far away from the 12 steps, but I was pained enough to do just like I did with Matt. I couldn't ask Paul for his number, but I asked his wife, Max, and I started calling Paul. And slowly but surely, he started getting me back to the 12 steps a day at a time. And I gave up my sobriety. For me, it's pretty easy. If I'm not clean and sober, I'm not abstinent. Because I'm blessed, I guess, to have, you know, what do they call us? Double winners or whatever. So came back to you guys. I started, joined a very structured and disciplined home group in AA. And they tell you, if you're not there 15 minutes before the meeting starts, you're late. And a lot of people show up an hour, you know, before, and they stay and they get commitments. We get commitments because that gets us to meetings, whether we want to be there or not. All this structure and discipline that I really hated when I was in the disease, but it holds me in very good stead. And I try to take that into Overeaters Anonymous with me. I can judge myself out of this program like that. I mean, I'm looking now at the screen, and I think that there's mostly women. I don't think any other guys have joined us. And so my head will be saying, well, you know, where are the guys? You know, and, you know, we're people who are showing up. Well, I didn't show up 15 minutes early today. And the other program, the Al-Anon program, teaches me to keep the focus on myself, because I have a hard time doing that. And it's so easy for me to judge what you should do and how you should be doing it, especially my wife and my, especially my kids, you know, and it's easy for me to do it to you guys also. I was in a play in college called Henry IV, Part One, William Shakespeare. And there was a character in there called Falstaff, and he was a drunk, and he was a happy drunk, and he drank alcohol. And for some reason they called alcohol sack, S-A-C. So SAC is a major character defect of mine, not the alcohol. The S stands for self-righteous, A stands for arrogant, and C stands for controlling. So whenever I'm judging you, I've got sack going on, and it happens a lot. I'm going to talk a little bit about the seventh traditions. Oh, so I came back to you. My abstinence date is July 20th, 1990. My sponsor is Terrell. My sponsor before that was Richie. Richie talked like this. Richie's head is, mind is, voice is very much in my head right now. If I'm ever eating cheese, he'll say, why are you eating artery clogus? If I renege on my exercise, I do like cardio 30 minutes. He says 4 to 7 times a week, 4 to 7 times a week. So that's kind of Richie's goal, my goal that I set for myself. I was calling Richie every day with the exact nature of my food and an inventory to clear out the spiritual craziness on a daily basis. And he told me, Michael, why don't you give me a reprieve on the weekends? You know, call somebody else. So, okay. So I started to call another person in the program on weekends. And the main thing is I'm very, very close to my sponsor. I think my OA sponsor, I'm the closest to of all the sponsors I have in my other programs. Terrell's now in Barcelona, and there's a 9-hour difference. So now I accommodate his hours, and I call him at 11 o'clock at night with an inventory. And it doesn't matter where he is in the world. I'm able, at least, and those of you who are sponsored, if you're like me, it's my responsibility to be proactive. I cling on to a sponsor like crazy. They ask me, give me a reprieve. But, so sponsors are an integral part of my sobriety. So I was never self-supporting through my own contributions, especially before I came to program. I would choose ladies that would take care of me and would enable me. So what had happened is when I got abstinent this time, I told my sponsor about 17 years prior, I was about to student teach to become a teacher. And I didn't want to teach. I wanted to be an actor. In those days, I was a little bit more handsome than I am now. The gray hair wasn't there. And so I'd leave my part-time job to go to the beach to get a tan in case an audition would come my way. But I never auditioned. And because I just don't like commitment, and I just want the easier, softer way. And why should I work if I have a lady that's going to take care of me? So anyway, my sponsor said, why don't you go back and talk to a counselor? And I said, well, I don't think I want to teach. I think I'm an actor. And he says, Michael, it doesn't matter whether you teach, whether you are a dentist, an actor. He says, what matters is you left something incomplete. Can you go back and talk to a counselor at that your college and see what it would take for you to, you know, take a class? So I went back, talked to a counselor, make a long story short, one little step at a time. I've now been a teacher for 28 years. And I went back and I got my special ed credential, and I have a pretty, pretty decent career. And I am self-supporting through my own contributions. I also have a wife and 4 children and 3 grandchildren. And when my wife decided after working for 34 years, she was outsourced. She said, I'm not going to work anymore, Michael. And I go, what do you mean? So we have 3 kids. And I got very angry and I got very scared. And I guess maybe that's my way of making amends to all the ladies that I treated like shit before me and were supporting me. So Christine hasn't worked for 15 years and she's retired. And I, most of the time in the beginning, it was rough. I had to go to Al-Anon because I got really angry at her. And I said, well, you got to work. And she hasn't had to work. And we've been self-supporting through my contribution. And I'm the hunter now and gatherer. And I feel good about that. I'm teaching summer school online, 2 hours a day, Monday through Thursday, kindergartners, theater arts. You guys are good practice for me because I'm always looking and trying to get their attention. And And I don't necessarily want to look because I'm just going to feel that you're an adult and hopefully you're understanding what I'm saying. But it's intense to try to keep kindergarten's attention for an hour at a time, two classes. But the money is good, and I'll be happy at the end of the month when I get that extra money. I'm also
5 minutes.
Thank you very much. I'm at the stage right now that I could actually probably retire. And if those of you who have retired, it's very, very scary. Again, left to my own devices, it's hard to get out of bed. So I have a primary purpose and I love my job. I love working, teaching theater to kids and stuff. But I also kind of want to retire. So we went to see a financial person a couple of days ago. And we're in something called finance class as well. And we kind of help people who have been irresponsible with their finances to kind of get out of that because we've dug ourselves out of that as well. But the financial counselor now is asking for what we're doing to get a budget. And so now I've started writing down everything that I'm spending. When I spend it, I piece of paper and stuff. I did that in the beginning of finance class, but now I want to hone it down and be more specific. And we're going to give it to the lady. And I've learned about CDs as opposed to my credit union, which gives me 50 cents on the dollar. And I could be making $150 anyway. So we're kind of trusting her and taking us through. So being aware of my finances is part of being aware of my food. And my sponsor sent me a mantra today. He usually sends me one every day because I ask for it. He better give it to me. And today's mantra was, God helps me to relax. Help me to relax into the moment, something like that. So as you can see, when I only have 20 minutes, and I'm trying to get it all in at once, you know, 32 years of abstinence, there's a lot that has happened. And so I look at the mantra and I breathe. And I know that God wants me to slow down and to absolutely enjoy life on life's terms, and has really taken a person like me who just wants to lay in bed and eat pizza and get loaded and is scared of life on life's terms. Oh, here's the thing that I learned. When I get scared and I don't want to do anything, I recently got an earring and there's a turtle on here. And when I don't want to do, when I get scared, like a lesson plans, I don't want to work at them. God, grant me the serenity to do 30 minutes worth of lesson plans. And I'll say the third step prayer and I'll maybe commit it to somebody else and I'll do my lesson plans. And I'll just do one thing at a time. That thing, inch by inch, life is a cinch, and yard by yard, it's friggin' hard. It's so true. Sometimes I get so scared, girls, ladies, gentlemen, is that I can't even see what's in front of me. And that's where you guys come in and help me to at least see the next indicated step. So I appreciate you being here. I think I'm close to ending. I got a couple more minutes. So when I was smoking, Red C used to say, he'd laugh at me and he'd go, Michael, ask God for the willingness to be willing to stop smoking. And I thought he was crazy, but I did. I asked God for the willingness to be willing. And then the action I took was I went to Nicotine Anonymous, a little bit of action. And then the 3-pack a day was removed. So I really got to ask God, give me the willingness to be willing, God, because a lot of times I'm not willing to be willing. So if I ask for that willingness, again, July 20th, 1990, I've been moving like a turtle, trudging along for 32 years. If I do it another couple of days, I'll have 33 years clean, sober, and abstinent with you guys. So I'm done.